Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Live.
This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
Welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach, and it's back to football for the Jaguars. And Gus, did you enjoy what little time you had off during the bye week?
Yeah, we did. I think that when the players are away, you get time as a coaching staff to sit down and meet and go through some things and evaluate where we are. And we did that for a couple days. And then, to get the coaches the time with their families. And I had a chance to see some football games. So it's all good now.
Good for you.
Yeah, that's
good,
right.
Good for you. I mean, a lot of people don't understand. Give people an idea of a coach's schedule throughout the course of a regular season week. I mean, Mondays, most of them are in by, 6 o'clock, 6:30 in the morning, go home at 11, 12 o'clock.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's about right.
Tuesdays, kind of similar to that.
Very similar. Come in 6 and, a lot of guys come in before that. And then, same thing. There's guys up here at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, so Mondays and Tuesdays are a grind because it's game plan formulation, evaluation of the pass game, and then Wednesday.
I'd say that Wednesday's the same. Guys, midnight, 11:30, somewhere in there. And then Thursday, like at night like tonight, you hope to get them to where they can see their family. And a lot of them, maybe around 9 o'clock, 9:30 they get home. And then Friday, they're here till about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 4. That's the time when you see them. They go home, see their kids, maybe get a chance. Not too many get to pick them up from school. But, Friday's the time when they can at least have a dinner together.
Probably got to kick some of them out of the building on Friday, don't you? Just to say, hey, go home.
some of them, they're pretty good. We've got a lot of coaches with some young families. And so it's always good for them to, make sure they take care of business at home. That balance is so important.
Yeah, so people always talk about the bye week of, getting a team healthier or allowing the body recover, allow people to mentally recoup. I mean, that's just as much for coaches as it is for the players.
It is. It's important for both. I think, the coaches, once, you get to kind of calm down a little bit and take a look at things and analyze things without the pressure of preparing for another game. And so you can really dive into some of those analytics things that our department is so good at.
And that's all part of the self-evaluation process that you guys underwent during the bye week. What did you learn, in this self-analysis? And let's start with offense.
Well, I think offensively, there's certain areas that you're looking at, and it's hard, Logs. I'd like to tell you all the areas, we weren't very good on 3rd and 1, so now this is what we're going to do. But, for a competitive standpoint, I don't want to get into too much detail. But you look at situations, you look at 3rd downs, you look at red zone, you look at goal line. Obviously, mm-hmm. It's a situation that popped up. And you look at, what are the areas, what can we do differently? What are our strengths? What are our weaknesses? How would we, block this differently? Or what would our mindset going into this situation? And you analyze all those. And you get some good statistics. And that's good on paper. And then a lot of times after you get on paper, you follow it up with film watching.
And as part of the process and preparation that you guys have during the course of a normal week and preparing for an opponent, you're looking at analytics, play calling tendencies, tendencies on down and distance. Do you guys evaluate that constantly through the regular season, or is this something that the bye week allows you to do?
No, now you're talking offensively. So offensively, mm-hmm. each week they go back and they self-scout. And that's one of my jobs as the head coach is I go back and look at our offense and I'll game plan or put together a plan. If I was a defensive coordinator, how would I attack our offense? And this is the analytics I would try to use against our offense. Mm-hmm. So, it takes some time to do that. But generally Monday night, Ole and I will sit down and I'll go through it and say, hey, here's some things that are popping up. Here's how we would try to attack it and try to use it to our advantage.
And so looking at the other side of the ball, defensively speaking, let me guess something here. Was it harder to get a gauge on your defense because, over the last couple weeks, and maybe this is just perception, that you guys have started to pressure more, Is it harder to evaluate or get a tendency on your defense because of the change over the last couple weeks?
Well, it is. I think when you look at it, and obviously the way to do it is if you can get pressure with four. You get an extra man in coverage. You can do some different things, some creative things coverage-wise. But I think you need a mix. There's some teams that blitz 45% of the time. And to an offense, they don't mind that. And that's who they are, so they prepare for it all week. So I think the challenge is that four-man rush, mixing in some pressure at certain times to keep an offense off base and to utilize it to your advantage. It's always hard to kind of find that balance. What allows, when you do have pressure, to make sure that they're effective.
What did you – special teams, the easy thing to look at, okay? We want to be better, more accurate on our field goals. We want to be better in punt coverage, and we want to be better in punt returns. Did you find some answers in the bye week?
Well, I think, over the past couple of years, the punt and punt return or our coverage teams have been pretty solid. But the last week or so, or a couple of weeks, really, Tampa game, they did really good against us with returns. So that heightens it now. You take a look at things and say, what are the issues? And, so a good evaluation there. And it's not only evaluation of personnel. Sometimes personnel placement's important, but also scheme and taking a look at, how can we coach this better? What's our philosophy in certain situations when we punt the ball? And take it from there.
And you talk about personnel on special teams. From looking at the injury report today, the only player on your roster that did not practice today was Marquise Lee. This is probably the first time I remember that the injury report has looked this way the entire season.
Yeah, it is. I think early in the season when we had quite a few injuries, we looked at and we knew when Dave and I sat and talked about, we knew there was this time that was going to come when we could get a lot of guys back. These weren't long-term injuries, but they were 3-, 4-, 5-week injuries. I think at this point in time, we kind of had an idea, can we stay healthy enough that at the bye week, those guys that were injured are coming back and we had no further injuries? And it kind of came to place this week.
So with the self-evaluation that you had during the bye week, and given that your roster is the healthiest that it has ever been, do you have or plan any lineup changes for this week? Or tweaking lineups?
Sure. I think some things would take place is like one of the questions I think you asked off the air was the timing with Julius and Blake Bortles, to get that up to speed. So that's where a bye week is important. And that extra Monday practice, you get to work on those timing things that are taking place. So, Julius was out for quite some period of time. So you utilize that time to get the timing issues worked out. So those type things are also taken care of. So it's not that guys are coming back and now you're completely healthy. There should be no issues as far as that. Well, now, fortunately, we can use this practice time to speed up some of that process.
So are you seeing that? The chemistry with Blake and Julius?
Yeah, certain routes. And, again, you can't go out there and run 100 routes and do that. You got to be smart. But you're starting to see that, and Julius is starting to feel good, and Blake, and along with the other guys, too, that are getting reps.
It's kind of surprising that I don't want to say it took so long, because, Julius was unavailable for the first four games. And then when he did come back, I'm sure he didn't have a lot of practice time, because it was kind of surprised a lot of people that he was going to be active at the Tampa Bay game. But watching from the first day of training camp, it seemed like Blake and Julius had a chemistry that happened immediately.
Yeah, I don't know, how much to put into the timing. There's some timing things you've got to work on, but we just had a deal today in practice where the timing was a little off between Blake and Allen Robinson. So it happens. I agree. I think it's probably a little bit overblown. I think that, but you get accustomed to playing with a certain guy and get a feel like how he'll adjust to certain routes. And I think those little intricacies that you see happen on the game day, I think that's kind of what we're working through.
The guys that were on the injury report that were listed as limited may be of some concern. Zane Beatles has a foot. Liz Frank, I guess, is what I read somewhere. James Sample has a shoulder. And then Josh Evans has a groin. And these are three guys that obviously could impact special teams. And then also a couple of them are usual starters. Any concern over those three guys?
No, I think we'll keep evaluating them as we go on. We'll meet and – you know, discuss it as a coaching staff. We got the training report now, so after today's practice. And some of these guys we got to keep evaluating. We'll evaluate again tomorrow and keep going through the week.
Is that a big part? Like, because once you go through two practices or 2 days or have a full practice or a partial practice, is Friday morning a big moment for
Well, it is. I think that you get a chance to evaluate where guys are, because after today's practice, you can kind of, all right, this guy has no chance to play on Sunday. You can kind of come up with that conclusion with some of the guys. This week, that's not the case. I think we need another couple days really to see where they're at.
Was it easy to get back into the flow this week with the team?
Well, I think, you know, sometimes Monday when you come back, you know, to get back into the flow of things, and it's a unique day. What are you trying to get accomplished in an extra day? You know, we've had these practices on bonus Mondays before. We had them last year and the year before, and you know, I think how do you utilize it? So we came back, it was aggressive, and then we had some walkthrough and we finished up, aggressive type of team practice. So, you know, to really get those guys back into it to ensure Wednesday's not their first day back is critical. And, boy, by the looks of it, the last 2 days, very, very good focused practices.
Well, that's one thing I was kind of curious to see, because, you know, when you get a win on the road and you won in the fashion that you did in London against the Buffalo Bills, to where it went back and forth, you know, and you guys ended up fighting to regain the momentum, and then to get the win in London, it's something that you can gain momentum from as a team. I mean, you talk about a positive learning experience that you guys had in London. And it's almost like you wish, okay, I wish the bye wasn't now.
Right. Well, you know what? I give credit. We've got some veterans, but we're young at certain spots. But I think overall our team is really handling this very in a mature fashion. And you can tell by the way they practice. Sometimes by the way they talk, but more so, you know, what's their practice work ethic like? And it really has been good all year. But you just felt it. I think it was coming back off of a bye, getting back into the routine of things, guys excited to be back. You know, all those really elevated the practice on Wednesday.
All right, let's take a break right here on the Gus Bradley Show. And this segment was brought to you by Beards Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. And we'll talk about the AFC South and the standings with the head coach right after this on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show, and you can join the head coach Gus Bradley at the 6th annual McKenzie's Run, a 5K run and walk. I would be walking. Plus a 1 mile fun run on November 21st. See Jackson DeVille, the Roar, and enjoy a post-run party with live music and games. Participants can watch themselves cross the finish line on the world's largest video boards. The run benefits the Mackenzie Noel Wilson Foundation and their mission to help young people recognize their potential. To register, visit mackenziesrun.org. And I'm not joking when I said that I would walk that.
What a great event. I mean, I've been fortunate to be a part of it the last couple of years. And, you know, I don't know what to say other than just a great event, great family to be a part of and associated with. And it's great to see so many people come out for that.
Lots of fun. Lots of fun and lots of sweat. If, folks, you want to get in, 1-800-355-NFL1 or 355-6351 locally. And, Gus, I read this week that, you know, because it's kind of the elephant in the room, I guess you could say, and that the division is wide open. You got the Colts and the Texans at 3-5. You guys are at 2-5, and then the Titans are at 1-6. Which means everybody has an opportunity. And I read that you actually talked about this with your team. Do you do that just to get it out there, get it over with, and then get back to the focus and the concentration where it needs to be, which is on the next task at hand, which may be a practice or a weightlifting session or whatever else?
Well, you know, I think there's different philosophies with it, Logs. It's like a player that before the game comes up to you and says, boy, I've got some anxiousness. I'm really excited about this opportunity and playing in this game. And you say, that's great. That's awesome that you feel that way. Now, go play. You know, I think so many times people go, oh, no, you shouldn't feel that way. No, don't feel that way. And, okay, what do we need to do to get rid of this feeling? Or, you know, you need to calm down and you can add clutter to it. And it's the same philosophy with this. Hey, you acknowledge it. Hey, this is a situation. We acknowledge it. Okay. Now, let's go to work, man. We're about winning each day. You know, respect that day. go out there and put all of our efforts into it. It doesn't change. We try to improve each day, and we're trying to be our best on Sunday. And we truly believe with that philosophy, we trust the results will come. That part doesn't change. The putting up the standings, hey, here's, we didn't do that. This took, you know, a minute. Addressed it with the team. And I think it's just like how you talked about. We addressed it. We acknowledged it. Now let's go to work, man. What a fun day to be a part of today. And let's go get some work done.
A lot of people would look at it as, hey, that's a great tool, or maybe a little extra push or motivation to maybe drive guys to work harder.
Well,
can it be that way?
Yeah, they know it. I mean, they know the situation. They're grown men, and that's why I say you acknowledge it, because they're mature. They understand the situation. But I think we use this as an opportunity to say, hey, as we play in heightened environments, the focus still is about today. And, you know, let's not miss today by spending so much time talking about what's to come. And, you know, that's how our team handled it.
Did you get a chance to watch the Indianapolis game this week against Carolina?
Yeah, I saw bits and pieces of it. You know, that was on Monday. So, you know, that's when we were watching film. So, you know, walking by the hall and seeing some of it, but not the whole game.
Yeah, kind of been a crazy year in the National Football League, and certainly within the division. Ken Wisenhunt gets fired from the Tennessee Titans, which I thought was crazy when you've got a young quarterback that's showing promise. Pep Hamilton gets released yesterday, I guess it was, or the day before yesterday. Does any of that surprise you?
Well, the NFL, I mean, you're right. Let's just talk about the year first. You know, every year is so different. You know, teams, you know, you look at predictions in the beginning and where teams are now. It's the NFL, man. It's hard. Each week is difficult, and you're going against other teams that are prepared very well. So, you know, that aspect, it's not surprising, you know, how competitive the league is and how much parity there is. So, you know, the other things, you know, we just take care of our business here and you know, put all of our attention into our team.
Yeah, because it just never seemed to stop. I mean, the Detroit Lions today, obviously they released their offensive coordinator last week, and then today all of a sudden Martha Ford, who is the owner, Martha Firestone Ford, ends up making some changes. The general manager's out. The president's out. Hey, that's tough business, Gus, that you're in.
Well, it is. You know, the NFL is tough. It's tough for players. It's tough for coaches. And it's so competitive. You know, the expectations. But that's part of the league. You know, it's a results-driven league. On the outside, we understand that. You know, the challenge for us is to keep our team to eliminate distractions as much as possible so we can keep their focus on really the task at hand. And that's a challenge in the NFL, but it's a great challenge, and I think one that we all welcome.
All right, let's go ahead and take a phone call here, and let's bring up Chris from the West Side. Good evening, Chris.
Hey, guys. I wanted to talk about some of the substitution issues we saw week before last, which seemed to be a continuation of some of the 12 men on the field penalties we saw, you know, week one against Carolina, weeks four and five. All at critical times. What's the source of these substitution problems, and what will you do to fix them?
Sure, that's a great question. First of all, the 12 men on the field, there are some communication issues. When you're on defense, you have different packages. You know, a base package, a nickel package, a dime package, a bandit package, you know, and the substitutions is critical. And we had some communication errors, just signaling in guys and how they ran on the field. To let the other guys know what package we're in. You know, we tried to address that on defense, and I think the last week we cleaned that up. But it spread over into special teams. What we found out was that these different packages we're using on defense, you know, creates a situation where we really got to be on it. Players really have to be on it and understand their roles and the depth charts. And you go over it and over and over it. But sometimes it's an injury here, an injury there that takes place at the last second. And you have those. But there's really no excuse, Chris. I mean, when you look at it, I mean, it's, let me try to justify it. Well, there is no justifying. When you got 12 men on the field, it's wrong. And when there's not 11 guys on the field and there's 10, it's wrong. You know, that's the areas that we need to address as a team. Not to put it on the players.
You work on that all week long too, right?
Well, you do. But I think, you know, like defensively, went from substituting on the field to where now in practice all substitutions take place from the sideline. to make it all game-like mm-hmm. Situations. Now, I've been a coordinator before, and there was no need to do that. But with this, we've seen this problem show up. So we took it to that level, and now everything's from the sideline.
And make another emphasis on it.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, so I think it's talk's one thing, but action is another. And these things have to be cleaned up. So really no excuse for it other than, hey, we got to get it corrected.
Yeah, it's interesting because I remember through the years, Saturday was one of those days that also kind of reemphasized substitutions because Saturday typically is a walkthrough. To where the head coach would be out on the field and say, okay, he'd say 12 personnel on offense, okay, punt team, and then, you know, he'd call different defenses out. Does that still go on?
Yeah, you see that. That's a big time in college football. They mm-hmm. do that. But hey, if you're having issues, then you bring it back to the pro level. And, you know, that those Saturdays and when you're substituting and things like that, it's important. But, you know, sometimes when injuries, we really got to be on it.
All right. And
like I said, really no excuse.
All right, we'll take some more phone calls after this break. If you want to get in, 1-800-355-NFL1 or 355-6351, and that's locally as well. And you can talk to the head coach right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. If you want to get in, 1-800-355-NFL1 or 355-6351. Let's go ahead and talk to John on the south side. Good evening, John.
Hey. So my question's about the team speed. So my question is, if all the starters got fully dressed in their pads and they had a race, a 50-yard race, who do you think, Gus, would be the fastest on offense and who do you think would be the fastest on defense? If just the starters, full pads, 50-yard race. Your opinion. I know you might not know, but
right. Is this the whole team, even guys that are on injured reserve?
Starters.
So or
just starters only.
Just starters. Okay.
Let I'm me putting my money on Jeremy Parnell on offense.
Well, you know, Corey Grant, you know, is a guy that obviously he's got great speed. Let's take a look at this now offensively. Wow.
You think you got TJ?
Yeah.
Allen Robinson?
I'd say Allen Robinson probably. He's the guy that's probably got the, you know, of the starters as far as speed on offense. On defense, I mean.
Well, let's stay on offense for a minute. If the fat guys, the offensive linemen, had a race, who would win?
You know what? I would say it'd be hard. You'd think Luke Jokel.
Yeah.
Luke Jokel's, you know, his 40 time at the combine, and, you know, he's athletic. So I would venture to say probably Luke Jokel. Defensively, I mean, that stands out, right? Talvin Smith.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Talvin Smith.
You think he'd be the fastest of anybody? Aaron Colvin.
Well, you know what? Now, you know, that's true now. You got to look at these guys on the edge.
And he did say, with pads on.
Yeah, with pads
full
on.
Full uniform.
You know, so at the corner spot, you know, Aaron Colvin, obviously now that he's back to full speed and health. Now, you know, this is going to create quite a discussion tomorrow. I don't know how many players listen, but they're going to bombard me and say, really, Gus? Really? But, you know, the corner spots, you know, Colvin, you know, obviously is pretty fast.
If Colvin and Telvin Smith were in a foot race and
I'm not
pads.
Getting into that, man. You know what? I want them to focus on having a good day tomorrow and focus on
you don't
on
want
that.
To have a race after practice when one pulls a hamstring.
Yeah, that's right. No, they'll be competitive in it. I know this is something that they'll want to do after the season, you know, to prove a point. But, you know, we've got some guys. But the point is, too, though, it's a great question because he's talking about game speed with pads on. I mean, there's guys that can go out there and run, but when you got all those pads on and you're running, there's guys that jump out at you. And that's what I said, like Telvin, when he runs fast in his pads.
Yeah, because I remember going all the way back to the early Jaguar days. I mean, Jimmy Smith, who one of the greatest Jaguars of all time, hands down. When he was on the clock in the offseason or in offseason workouts, I mean, there were other guys faster than him. But when he put the pads on, and it was a little – signal from Mark Brunell that it was a go route because Jimmy had single high man coverage. Jimmy could outrun guys that at the combine would time way faster than him. He just had that ability on game day.
You know, on defense, you talk about instincts or that ability to diagnose plays. And those guys that can diagnose plays play fast. And, you know, we've all seen those guys that run 4-4 but play like they're 4-8. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot to it, not only just with the pads on, but understanding the scheme.
All right, so if let me say this first, that I apologize to all offensive linemen for saying fat guys. I got to change it and say the svelte athletic offensive lineman had a foot race. So I don't want to get in any trouble there. If the coaching staff had a race, who would win?
Yeah. Oh boy.
In full coaching gear.
Full coaching gear.
Yeah.
Let's see. You know, it had to be Jerry Sullivan, right?
Lux? Come on.
He runs. He's on the treadmill. He works out all the time. I don't know. You know what? Thankfully, we don't have a race with the coaches.
I would put my money on Luke Butkus because he would hammer everybody at the start line, and he would be the only one standing going through the 50.
It could be.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. When we come back, we'll talk more with you and the head coach right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. We'll take a few phone calls before we get some conversation about the New York Jets. And let's go talk to David on the west side. Good evening, David. Hey, David. You there, buddy?
Yeah.
You're on.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, David. How are you doing?
All right, doing good. I just wanted to say to Gus that there's a lot of us out here that have been fans since the team started to support you and Dave, and just would like to say, I know you won't comment on this, but, you know, it's kind of hard to do a lot of things really fast with this team because many of us feel like if Gene Smith had tried to sabotage the team on purpose, he couldn't have done a worse job, and that's nothing against him. But just wanted to say, Gus, that that going forward, what can you guys do as a coaching staff, and what can the players do to where people called into the show last week and said, yeah, but they almost gave it away, and then correctly people said, yeah, but they didn't. So what can we do going forward when we're in these games to finish like we did against Buffalo?
It's a great question. I think that, you know, you use your past experiences. So that game will play big now. When we're in that situation again, the players will draw from that. And that's so important. I think what we need to continue to do is develop our players. We've got some guys that are developing at a rapid pace, you know, some younger guys, and we need to continue to do that, but we need to spread that growth through the whole team. And then as we continue to, you know, keep looking and trying to add players that help us out, and, you know, that's what takes place in the NFL, and you're always looking to improve. But we're, you know, I think our philosophy is developmental coaches, build it through the draft, continue to have good drafts, and keep developing.
Thank you for the call, David. We got time to squeeze one more in here, and let's go to Ben on the south side. Good evening, Ben.
Good evening. I hope you guys are doing well. I've got a question that's cut right to the point that a lot of people in Jacksonville are wondering. Last game against the Bills, you guys drove all the way down the field, and you have Bortles, Hearns, Robinson, Thomas, Harbor, all these weapons on your Yeldon. And you decide to give it to Toby Gerhart four times in a row. My question is, what was going through your mind as a collective coaching staff? And after the third time, why do it again?
Sure. This has been a question that's come up multiple times.
You've got that question before, haven't
yeah.
you?
Yeah, but that's good, man. It's a great question. I think when you go into it, you have a goal line package, and each week it's different how you look at what you're going to do. Sometimes it's three wide. Sometimes it's heavy personnel. And, you know, Toby Gerhart in the preseason. And
it was fantastic.
It was great. And then even in the game earlier, we were in a heavy personnel look and got, what, a couple yards on a third down. So that's kind of what we went into it in the game plan. And you always have runs and passes. And right there, you know, it was, 12 inches or whatever it was away. You know, and, you know, we didn't get it. And, you know, it was more of a message to send to the whole team. Hey, we're going to run this now. And they might know it, and we know it. And it's about developing an attitude. And, you know, it wasn't just Toby now. We had some things up front that we didn't do a good job of. And we're looking for that time when the offensive line looks over the sideline and says, run the ball. You know, that's the time when I look forward to it, where they look and say, put it on us, mm-hmm. and let's do that. And I think as a coaching staff, we said, we're putting it on you now. We're going to put you in this situation, and you got to come through. And we didn't. But Next time, you know, we'll have other opportunities. But we have to look as a coaching staff and say, what could we have done? Is there anything that we could do? What would be our philosophy if that happened again? But it was a message to the team, and I think it was message sent, message received. Our mentality down there is we're going to count on that front and the back so you can make sure we get in there, and we just didn't get it done.
As part of the – you just mentioned a few minutes ago about how we have some young players that are developing rapidly, and one of them – and I don't know if I've ever seen a young running back develop at the pace that he has, is T.J. Yeldon. Is he even ready to maybe even take some of that
sure.
in the future?
Sure. You know, you look at, and I think you look at guys having different roles. Look at in defense. Sergio is not a starter, but we came up with a different package, a bandit package that inserted him into a third down situation, and we gave him a role and tried to utilize his skill set, and it was effective. And no different, all right? Toby Gerhart, he has his role, short down, short yardage back, goal line back. That's his role, along with the offensive line. Put him in that situation, and we just weren't successful. And, you know, you try to utilize everybody's strengths and put them in position of where they can succeed. But I think overall, more than anything, that's a mentality that we have to develop when we're that close to the goal line. That, you know, we got to be able to have it. There's going to be four-minute situations in a game where they know we're going to run it, we know we're going to run it, and we've got to find a way to run the ball.
That's really what you want to become, because I mean, you've had this conversation before, and to go back to when I was a player and we would face the Buffalo Bills, there was no secret to what they were going to do. I mean, you knew it was going right. to be either this play or it was going to be that play. But when you get to be good, or you get to the point where you are a team that knows who you are, it's not a matter of trying to trick anybody. It's a matter of executing what you do and doing it at a high level and telling the team, this is what we're going to do. Try right. and stop it.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it wasn't the same run play. There was different run plays that we utilized to try to attack the defense. But, you know, I don't know, Logs, you call it, like I said before, analytics. It didn't say, you know, to go for it, you know, and fourth and one. But it was, I wanted to send a strong message to the team that, hey, we're going to run the ball, and there's no way getting around it. And you've got to stand up, and we've got to make this, and we've got to make it work. And I think it's a message that we sent to the team. Now, fortunately, we still won the game. So the message was strong. We got across to the team, and we won. That's great. But we're fortunate.
All right, so the next time you're in, first and goal,
we're gonna
at
pass
the one.
It more time. No.
And it's fourth and one. Do you connect the field goal?
No. You know, and you know, every game's different, yeah. you know, and based on who you're playing and what the score is and where it is time in the game. And, I don't know what else to say other than that, you know what, we're going to be aggressive. And it's like, hey, should we kick a field goal? No. We want to be a team that when you have momentum going for you, we're going to capture that, and, you know, we want to be a team that keeps the hammer down.
And starts putting nails into the
That's
into the
right.
Wood.
That's the mentality we want as a team, and I think we want to use that time to demonstrate that message. Again, talk is cheap. What's the action? Well, the action is we're going to run it four times in a row, and we got to make it work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we need to have that mentality as a team. And, you know, some of these guys haven't been in that situation before, but they'll use this experience if it should pop up again in the future.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show, and we'll talk some New York Jets after this right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach. And this week, the New York Jets at MetLife Stadium. 1 o'clock kick, right? Am I right? Yes, 1 o'clock kick. And looking at the New York Jets, the one thing that has impressed me about them over the last couple of years was their ability to accumulate defensive linemen that all seem to have the ability to perform at a high level. And they added another one this year, the one that kind of fell into their lap, Leonard Williams. I believe he was 6th overall in the draft. And they added him to Muhammad Wilkerson, who is leading them in sacks. He's got 5. Sheldon Richardson, who was the team MVP last year, had a 4-game suspension. He's back in the mix. And then they have a defensive tackle or nose tackle, Damon Harrison, who probably doesn't get a whole lot of conversation about him, but he might be one of the best 3-4 nose tackles in the game today. This is a stout front you guys are going to face offensively.
It really is. You know, now how do they get them all on the field at the same time? And they find a way. You know, Sheldon Richardson, Leonard Williams, I mean, Muhammad Wilkerson, all these guys on the field. And, you know, their front is a really formidable front, very challenging front. And the way they line up, Logs, they get a lot of one-on-ones. It's hard to slide the protections based on their alignment.
Now, explain to people how that happens, because the way they line up. Now, Buddy Ryan, you know, in the Bears 46 defense, a game fame, used to run what was called a double eagle look, where you had a head-up nose tackle, three techniques, and then you had guys that were on the outside. And so, basically, it was five men coming. That's what they run, don't they?
Yeah, you see a lot of that from them, double eagle. And what it does is it puts them one-on-one. And, you know, so that, you know, depending on how you turn the protection and how you set things up, there's going to be some one-on-ones. So there's going to be, you know, AJ's going to have Sheldon Richardson one-on-one, and you're going to see those. So with that, it forces you to play a lot of single safety, a lot of man coverage on the perimeter, and your corner's got to be able to hold up. And that's why you saw Todd Bowles go out and get Revis, and he went out and got Cromartie. Because in that system, you've got to have corners that can really stand up and play. And, you know, that's why they put together a pretty good defense.
And they also added Buster Skrine in free agency, who was former Cleveland Brown, who was a starter for them last year. Very good player. Are they still really good? I'm talking about Cromartie and Darrell Revis.
Well, yeah. I mean, they create issues because of Cromartie's got great length. Has played the game a long time, so understands route concepts and what he's going to see. Hey, if he's got a little bit of inside leverage, he gets an outside release, he can pare it down to only a couple types of routes he's going to get. Revis is, again, very intelligent player. You know, you'll see him play press, you'll play off, and it's based on splits, so he can recognize splits and you know, kind of diagnose plays really quick. So their experience and what they've gone through in their career, I think, is really helps them.
What do you think about their linebacking core? The guy that has consistently been pretty good there for a number of years is the inside linebacker, David Harris. He's their leading tackler. He's got two sacks, two forced fumbles. And watching him roam the field, number 52, he's a very good player.
Very good player. Get this, Lux. When I was in Tampa Bay, we coached the Senior Bowl, and the linebackers were Puz and David Harris. You know, so
that's interesting.
Yeah, it was really interesting. So, you know, I had a chance to work with him for a week, and boy, let me tell you something. He is really into ball, really sharp. I know they count on him. You know, we got a guy like John Izik in house, and that knows some of these guys' personalities. And the same thing that I picked up on the week, he said, man, he's just a leader of that defense, plays hard, always in the right position. So you're right, you picked out a good one there.
And seems to be a smart one, too, because, I mean, he was kind of the captain of the ship with that Rex Ryan defense that can be so complicated and the communication has to happen. He was really the kind of the centerpiece of that defense and still continues to be for the New York Jets with Casey Rogers as their defensive coordinator. Let's take a break right here on the Gus Bradley Show. When we come back, we'll talk about the offensive side of the football for the New York Jets right here on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back. We're going to talk a little New York Jets offense. And this week, the head coach, Todd Bowles. And before we get to the offense, Todd Bowles, you know Todd Bowles, right?
Yeah.
Former defensive coordinator of the Arizona Cardinals, was with Bruce Arians, who might be up for Coach of the Year honors once again, doing a great job in Arizona. And Todd Bowles was able to put together some really good defenses for the Arizona Cardinals the last couple of years. And so you guys crossed paths, same division, right, Seattle?
Yep. For what, 3 or 4 years? Or a couple of years, I think it was. But, you know, I think with Todd, I had a chance to meet him at the owners' meetings. I mean, what you see on TV or in his interviews, that's how he is, you know. And, you know, he's the players love him, and, you know, they play hard for him. And you're seeing that on tape.
I think that it was a good hire for the Jets, just because having been in that market before, a lot of things can get a little crazy. And certainly from where they were at with Rex, which is a little crazy, to where you get Todd Bowles into the mix, which is, you know, very straight, monotone, matter of fact. I think that, that a coach like that can be good for a market like that. So I'm happy for him.
Yeah. No, he's a good man. And, you know, the short time that I visit with him and having dinner with him, you know, it, you know, you're right. I think he's a very knowledgeable football coach, very smart, handles his players really well, holds them to a high standard. And that's what you need to do.
And one of the things that he did in putting his staff together was to hire Chan Gailey, who has a very long track record, was a former head coach of the Buffalo Bills, certainly installed a running style of offense that he had with them, and obviously two running backs that were pretty good as part of that process. And with the New York Jets, he's established the same thing. Chris Ivory is really the main engine for that Jets offense. From watching him, and I did some numbers this week, and I don't remember exactly what they are. Maybe I can refer to them here in a minute. But the success that they have record-wise is based on how Chris Ivory runs the football.
No doubt. They want to establish the run. That's their mentality. They want to stop the run on defense, run the ball on offense. Chris Ivory, perfect back for their system. Tough, hard-nosed, disruptive. You know, can handle the ball as many times as you want as far as giving it to him. So, you know, I can remember when he was at the Saints and he had a productive career there. Then they let him go, and New York picked him up, and I think they're really pleased that they have him.
And here's the numbers. In the four Jet wins, the team's 4-3. In their four wins, he has 83 carries for 460 yards. That's 5.5 yards a carry. In their three Jet losses, he was inactive for one of those games, and so the two games that he did play in those losses, he had 32 carries for 58 yards, 1.8 yards per carry. So pretty drastic there.
Yeah, without a doubt. They want to be able to run the ball. And, you know, they got behind in that Oakland game, and it forced them to do some different things where they had to get away from the run game. But in their ideal game, it's a close game, and they run the ball and manage the clock and get some turnovers on defense and create a short field for the offense, score points, and win the game.
Watching him run, when he gets the ball, he's a little like he's different than T.J. Yeldon, but he's a little like him in that he will go from one side of the field to the other.
Yeah, and he runs angry, you know, and you know,
a little like Marshawn Lynch,
yeah,
a little bit.
You know, he's you know, it's another one of those games, a great opportunity for us as far as setting the edge, getting 11 guys to the ball carrier, and make sure, because you can't count on just one, and the tackling plan that we talk about every week is in effect. And, you know, you just got to be really aware of him. Different style of running than we saw with Buffalo. You know, different
McCoy
types.
Real shifty.
Right, and different style of running as far as run blocking, too. More double teams and, you know, really trying to work up to the second level.
You talk about the double teams. And watching James Carpenter, who's a guard that they got, you know him, got him in free agency from the Seattle Seahawks, big physical guard, and combined with Willie Cologne, the former Pittsburgh Steeler. That's two very physical guards. And, of course, the right tackle is a former Seahawk as well. And Breno Giacomini?
Breno Giacomini, yeah.
Giacomini, okay. Physical offensive line.
Yeah.
And when they run the ball, it obviously makes it easier on a quarterback. And Ryan Fitzpatrick has been named the starter this week. Had the thumb injury last week against the Oakland Raiders. And he's going to play this week. What do you see out of him besides just – an awareness and a veteran presence?
Well, first of all, he's been with Chan Gailey before, you know, when they were at Buffalo. So he has that experience of being in the offense, and I think Chan uses his strengths very well. You know, he's very direct as far as a quarterback. He's decisive in his decisions. He knows how to read coverages and put the offense in the proper play. And, you know, he's making a few mistakes. And I think that's really affected the team last week when he got hurt. And they really counted on him, and I think he has a certain rhythm with those receivers as well.
Well, and he'd better be considered a smart guy because he went to Harvard.
That's right. You know, he's been to some different teams now, too, and has picked up offenses. So he's seen a lot of schemes. He's seen a lot of defenses now. And, you know, like I said, I think they really learned to trust him.
All right, one more segment to go with the head coach right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
All right, Gus, this week, Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker, the two options for Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Brandon Marshall is a stud.
Yes. You know what? Here's what they do, Logs. You got a really good running game, so you want to load the box, but it forces you to go one-on-one on the perimeter. Some teams, if the run game's not going, they like to double. They'd like to do some different things scheme-wise to add help over there, but you're exposed now to the running game. So, you know, that's a challenge with those two receivers.
Well, and a great challenge because very good running the football, the New York Jets are, and your defense right now, number one in the NFL in yards allowed per rush at 3.52. Big challenge.
Yeah, it is. Great challenge, Logs. Great challenge.
Thank you, Gus.
Okay, thank you.
Join everybody same time, same place next week right here on the Gus Bradley Show.